Welcome to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. It's the weekly program about health, nutrition, fitness, and all things lifestyle. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, and today I welcome Dave Cushing as a new co-host filling in for Tim Henney while he's on hiatus. Dave is a DJ here at KPCW, and I'm happy to have him join for a few months. And he'll also be alternating with Graham Anthony, who will join us in a few weeks. Good morning.
Good morning, Lynn. And as they say in my home state of Minnesota, I am pleased as punch to be in the studio with you.
Do they only say that in the home state of Minnesota? I think I've heard that elsewhere.
Well, it was one of our classic old school senators who was known for that.
All right. Hey, just a quick word on traffic. We got a report that detour as you arrive in Salt Lake, you can't pull onto Foothill Boulevard where a lot of people commute from Park City. You have to go around and do a detour on I-215. Apparently, that's completely backed up. You might want to try 13th. East instead. And first today in the program, we speak with Mark Lukacs. His work has been published in the New York Times, The Atlantic, and Wired magazine, but this new book he's written is deeply personal. He writes about the journey with his wife through a handful of psychotic episodes. It's a memoir chronicling their journey through the life-shattering mental illness. The book is called My Lovely Wife. In the psych ward, we speak with him first.
Then, in the monthly segment on the connection of arts and culture to our mountain lifestyle, we're going to be joined by Hadley Dynack and Travis English. They'll talk to us about arts and culture in Eastern Summit County.
And finally, from the Park City Hospital's Live Well Center, we're joined by Dr. Kelly Woodward about what is becoming one of my favorite topics to talk about, sleep. Have you noticed the preponderance of articles recently about the importance of sleep? Dr. Woodward will be here to talk about it because, well, it's one of his favorite topics, too, and he's an expert on it.
This is The Mountain Life. Stay with us. We'll be back after these words from our underwriters.
Miller Orthodontics is a proud supporter of The Randy Barton Show. Since 1988, my wife and I have provided a combined 45 years of orthodontic care. For our Invisalign patients, we provide digital scanning and imaging technology that eliminates the need for wet molds of your teeth. More information is at m2ortho.com.
This is Dr. Phil Davidson of Davidson Orthopedics and KPCW supporter, providing knee and shoulder care focused on cartilage restoration and joint resurfacing. We are now incorporating stem cell therapy and regenerative orthopedics. More information on our website at davidsonorthopedics.com.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Dave Cushing. Our first guest, Mark Lukacs, is a writer whose work has appeared in the New York Times, The Atlantic, and Wired magazine. This new work, a new book he has written, is very deeply personal. He tells the story of what started off as a real fairy tale life. He found the love of his life at Georgetown as a college student. They make this wonderful life together. And in their early 20s, they have great jobs and happiness. Their fairy tale ends when at age 27, his wife suffers a terrifying and totally out-of-the-blue psychotic episode, complete with demonic delusions and thoughts of suicide. Now, this is only the beginning of their struggles with this episodic mental illness. Lukacs's new book is called My Lovely Wife in the Psych Ward, and he joins us now to tell us about his memoir and how one family copes with debilitating mental illness. Mark Lukacs, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Morning. Thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Well, we appreciate you joining us, and I just want to start off by saying bravo. I mean, what a... I mean, it's so personal, and I think that you're doing such a great service to really the world by bringing this story out, illuminating mental illness and the role it plays in a life that was otherwise pretty normal.
Well, thank you for saying that. You know, when Julia was first hospitalized, I'm a history teacher first, like that's my original trade, and so I looked for answers, right? And so when Julia was hospitalized, I went to the internet and researched and tried to make sense of what was happening. And I did find, fortunately, that there's a pretty good amount of resources to understand mental illness, but there are not very many that put mental illness in the context of a family, for not just how it is for the person diagnosed, but for all the people who love and want to take care of that person. And so I didn't come up with the idea to write the book immediately. In fact, it took quite a while to even think of this idea. But that's really been one of the driving motivations behind this, is to try to give voice to the family experience of mental health, not just the individual who's diagnosed by it.
Right. And I think how you really have accomplished this here is by bringing it home. I think we think that the mental illness is something that happens to other people, and we can read about them clinically, but we know, if you look at statistics, many of us, and many, you know, what is it, 1 in 4 will experience some kind of mental illness. And so I just find your story really compelling. Take us first through through the onset of Julia's her mental illness.
Well, as you said in the intro, we met in college. It was actually the first week of college, and really did have this charmed life set up. Moved to California, both loved our jobs, and everything was kind of on this fast track to a happily ever after kind of story. And then Julia took a new job. She's a really ambitious, hardworking person. This new job, I don't know for what reason, but she just kind of got stuck, you know? She had a hard time completing fairly straightforward tasks, and she would call me during the day and ask me to edit emails that she was working on. These are really basic emails of just a few sentences, and she would spend hours, you know, overthinking everything. And that was sort of my first time, like, wow, something's not usual here. Like, this is not typical Julia behavior. And then she lost her appetite and wasn't really interested in food. But most importantly, I heard you're having a guest later who's talking about sleep. Julia couldn't sleep. I mean, she just, no matter what we did, we were trying meditation, and massage, and like light music, and scented candles, and kind of everything we could. But Julia was unable to sleep at night. And after 6 weeks of the start of the job, and then all these little symptoms adding up, by the end, she was fully delusional, you know, and I really felt like I had no choice but to take her to the emergency room. And that's really where things were kind of like, our life was disrupted so much.
Your life was disrupted by the emergency room visit, and then her pretty much involuntary containment in a psych ward for a number of weeks. And then she came out and you had to deal with her in the home. That's an amazing story. Can you tell something about the coping strategies you and Julia developed, like repeating your wedding promises to each other and later practicing acts of kindness, and about your mad map?
Yeah, sure thing. There's a lot to unpack in that question, but as you got at, she was in the hospital for almost a month, and then when she came home, she was intensely depressed and suicidal, and honestly needed someone with her to keep her safe. And so I took an extended leave from my work, and we were with each other pretty much every day. During those days, it was almost kind of a matter of survival. That's really what it felt like. It felt like we were just living moment to moment, trying to make it through those to get on to the next moment. And so we were, I think, really aware of how heightened the circumstances felt. And so I don't know if we've ever been more gentle and patient and nice with each other, even though it was like really, really trying. And poor Julia was struggling with these feelings of depression and self-loathing. We just really tried to love each other. When she came out of that depression, which lasted about 9 months, then things became really difficult for us, because Julia was like, I'm free. I don't feel this way anymore. I can go back to just living life and having fun. And I was like, you're better. And I've been bottling up how difficult this was for me, and now I need to let that all out to someone. And so we were really in different places, and it took a lot of communication, a lot of talking to kind of like figure out how to support each other, because now we were in such different spaces. We even kind of like had role reversals. Before Julia's illness, I was really the like, you know, spontaneous kind of free living type, and Julia was more of the planner and organizer and even the worrier. But now with this illness in our background, I was the one who was constantly worrying and double checking if we were doing the right thing, were we being cautious enough? And Julia was the one who was more like, let's just go do it. Come on. Like, what's the problem? What's the hang up here? So we really had to spend a lot of time renegotiating what our relationship looked like and how we connected with each other. And that was just in the wake of the first episode. And after the first episode, we really did have the hope that this would be a one-and-done deal, that it was a really difficult year, that hopefully it wouldn't come back. But unfortunately, Julia was hospitalized again. And that's where the concept of the Mad Map comes in. Because after her second hospitalization, we had to confront the reality that this is, in fact, part of our lives forever, and that a relapse is possible. I mean, Julia's been hospitalized 3 different times over a 5-year period. And so the first episode was so disruptive, and it really felt like, how can we manage our lives with this in it? And then the second one had a really similar feeling. But after the second one, when she was feeling better, we resolved, we're like, you know what, if this is going to come back, we can't let this be such a wrecking ball that comes in and ends our careers. I mean, Julia had to leave 2 jobs because of her first two hospitalizations. I've left work. All these other things just, like, disrupt so much. So instead, it was during a time of wellness, and she was not suicidal or psychotic, that we basically planned out what a hospitalization would look like. Like, what are the things that we knew we would have to do in order to try to protect her job, in order to allow me to keep working? And, of course, also, we have a child together in order to keep our son safe and healthy and feeling loved. And so when her third hospitalization came along, which was about 2.5 years ago at this point, we really had the chance to kind of put some of those plans, which were just theoretical, into practice. And I have to say, it made a huge difference for us. The third hospitalization by far felt the least traumatizing, and I felt like it put the least amount of strain on our family dynamic. And so that's really one of the heart of the messages of the book, is to allow families to feel empowered in how they approach this, to make sure that they're respecting everyone's point of view and listening with an open heart and an open mind, even though people might have different perspectives and different, suggestions for how to manage this stuff. You really got to listen to each other and honor the challenges of their individual experience of these illnesses in order to create a plan so that when and if crisis comes back, you feel like you can handle it and not be so scared of it anymore.
Right. Back in the 70s, they thought that the advent of new drugs for these conditions was going to change everything, and I guess it has. But in your view in the book, you say that medication is still more of an art than a science. And can you just talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, you know, I didn't really understand mental illness when it hit our family. And I thought that, like with a headache, you get the pill and it goes away, you know, and it's almost immediate. Psychiatry is much more about symptom treatment, where a doctor recognizes a symptom in a patient, and there are a variety of medications that address that symptom. But each person's brain is so different from the others. You know, there's obviously things we have in common, but everyone's brain is their own. And so their reaction to medications are in fact their own. And so basically doctors would say, okay, Julia's psychotic. There's 10 different medications that can address psychosis. Given these other factors that are at play, we're going to try this one first. And if it doesn't work, then we're going to switch it out with a different one. And then when they found the one that addressed psychosis, it's like, okay, now she's depressed. Well, there's also a bunch of antidepressants. let's try this one. Okay, this one actually makes her more depressed and more suicidal. So we're going to change that out, and we're going to change this, and then add more. And so it's kind of like an informed, educated guessing game, you know. And for the patient, and I think for the family, that can feel super frustrating. But I don't blame the doctors. I know that they're doing the best they can. I mean, I've grown to marvel at the complexity of the human brain and just how difficult it is to support, you know, like to treat, take care of the brain, just because everyone's experience is so different. I think that was really one of the biggest things that I had to learn. I was expecting that when they were going to give her the diagnosis, there was going to be the standard treatment, and everyone with that diagnosis, that treatment helped them in the same way. And it's so, so different than that. Everyone can have really, really different reactions to these pills. So it's hard. It's really hard to be patient through that process. But you got to just try your best and keep hope that you're going to eventually find the right medication and think you're going to find some stability.
If you're just joining us, our guest is Mark Lukacs. He's written a book called My Lovely Wife in the Psych Ward. He's also a teacher and a freelance writer. His work has been published all over, including the New York Times, The Atlantic, Wired Magazine. Mark, I want to ask you a little bit about, you know, the onset of psychosis for Julia was when she was 27. And we often hear of this sort of thing coming on in the 20s, sometimes the early 20s. You know, you've got, I mean, it sounds like Julia was perfectly normal until this happened. And I think people wonder, you know, they think about their children, or if they're in their 20s. You know, were there any signs before that you, when you look back on, you could have seen? Or did psychosis run in her family?
You know, those are both great questions, and these are questions that everyone asks, right? Like, when you go through a mental health crisis, the first thing the doctors ask is, does this run in your family? For Julia, no. There was no one in her family who had any mental illness. And then, of course, the second is there any warning signs? And there's no question about it that Julia has perfectionist tendencies. Yeah. In college, she had almost a 4.0 GPA, and she had, like, these amazing internships throughout college, and she was super hardworking and could be hard on herself. But to be honest with you, especially now that I'm a teacher and I work with a lot of high school students, I don't think her perfectionism was really that out of the norm. I think I've seen plenty of people who hold themselves to a high standard and work hard and maybe get a little anxious in that, but otherwise manage it and find their success. And so that was actually one of the main reasons that Julia's hospitalization was so hard to treat, was because she didn't have answers to the two biggest questions of, does it run in the family? Well, no. And were there any warning signs? Also, no. I mean, this just really came out of left field, hit really, really hard and really fast. And that's why the medical team was kind of left scratching their heads, because she didn't fit into any of these kind of textbook definitions of what these illnesses look like.
Right. Well, and then, you know, it's interesting in the book when you talk about the day she started that job and she came home and she said to you, they're all so cool and smart, or something like that, as though it was like the first time that she exuded something that was anything other than confident.
And, yeah, exactly.
And I found that to be interesting. And so in some ways, do you think the psychosis was coming on and then this job sort of helped trigger it and the stress related to it? Or, you know, we all have a lot of stress in our lives. Sometimes some jobs more stressful than others. You know, do you feel like maybe it was the job itself that triggered? I don't know. I know you've asked yourself all these questions.
You know what? I really have. And I don't want to blame the job, because I don't think that's fair. And I also don't think I'm ever going to get a real answer. You know, it's not like I can go back and look at all the factors that were going on. I mean, another thing is Julie and I were considering becoming parents. And so the idea of embracing parenthood is a really big life transition. So there was a lot going on. But, you know, this is the interesting thing about mental health. I'm going to go back to the broken arm analogy. Like, if you fall out of a tree and break your arm, people don't spend a lot of time thinking, well, why did you break your arm? You know, they just say, you fell out of a tree and you broke it, and we're going to deal with it. But when someone has a mental health crisis, it's understandable. It invites speculation. Well, where is this coming from? Because the experience of it is so mysterious and scary, you know? And so for, like, if someone's sitting there all of a sudden nervous, like, could this happen to me or someone that I love? You start to get really worked up around, well, what are the factors that are going on? I will acknowledge that, like, I think we were living pretty healthy lives. I think we were taking care of ourselves. I think it's likely that Julia had this illness from birth, and it just needed the right combination of factors to set it off, you know, and it did. And by the way, her current diagnosis, which she got after her second hospitalization, is bipolar disorder, which, you know, typically swings from mania. Julia experiences mania as psychosis to then depression with times of stability in between. And so, I don't know, it's a good question. I've spent so much time thinking about it, but to be honest, where I currently stand is that I've grown to accept I'm probably not going to get an answer. And so instead of, you know, instead of necessarily trying to understand the core, we instead try to look at more like knowing that lack of sleep is a trigger, knowing that work, sweat, stress can be a trigger, but not always a trigger, because she's gone through some really stressful times without a relapse. Like, what can we do behaviorally in our day-to-day life to prioritize living what feels like a balanced, patient, happy lifestyle so that we can try to keep a relapse away? You know, that's really where we stand with all this now.
Mark, I'm going to give you one last question about poetry. You're a surfer, and you talked about paddling out early in this episode with the song Viva La Vida stuck in your head by Coldplay. I'm a huge fan of that song. It's about a guy who has it all, but then suddenly things go south. Do you have a favorite couplet from that, from the lyrics of that?
Yeah, my favorite line is, "Who would ever want to be king?" Because I was under the, I had delusions of grandiosity where I thought that I could fix Julia. I thought that I could either ask the right questions, love her enough, and my love and care for her was bigger than her mental illness. And that was such a crushing burden to feel. And I kind of had to accept that my love wasn't enough to address her health issues, that she needed professional support, therapeutic support, medical support, all that other stuff. And yeah, of course I was going to continue to love her, but that, why would I want to be the king of this place? It's just too much to carry on one person's shoulders.
What a great answer. Mark Lukacs, he's the author of this book, My Lovely Wife in the Psych Ward. It's a memoir. And again, congratulations and thanks for writing this book. I could not rip it out of Dave's hands over the weekend. And
Well, thank you both. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us on The Mountain Life. Take care, Mark.
Sure thing. Have a good one.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was great. Who would want to be king?
Yeah, for sure.
Stay with us. We'll be back to talk about art and culture in Eastern Summit County when we return. It's The Mountain Life.
For adventurers on a budget, the Utah Olympic Park offers a host of activities at no charge. Admission and parking are always free. Start with a tour of the Alf Engen Ski Museum and the Eccles 2002 Winter Games Museum. Best of all, come support athletes from all over the world who train at the park. Open daily from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Details available at utaholympiclegacy.org.
Utah Olympic Park is a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing winter sport and recreation opportunities and a KPCW supporter.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Dave Cushing, my new fill-in, semi-permanent co-host.
Totally psyched to be in the studio with you, Lynn, and the guests.
Absolutely. Glad to have you. Well, each month we invite Hadley Dynack, who is the director of the Park City Summit County Arts Council, to help us and our listeners understand the connection of arts and culture to our mountain lifestyle. And each month she brings along a guest that makes this connection in his or her daily life. This month, we're lucky to have Travis English, who manages events for Summit County. But before that, he revolutionized, I like to say, the Summit County Fair. And he loves the presence of art and culture in Eastern Summit County. Travis and Hadley, welcome to The Mountain Life. Great to have you back.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Well, hey, let's just cruise right into it. Travis, well, you do events out in the county and here in the county,
yes,
but in Park City, mm-hmm, like, you know, out in Kimball Junction area.
Snyderville.
What do you think about that bigger question about arts and culture, the experience in the Eastern Summit County versus the West, or is it all the same, you know? Do people, when it comes right down to it, love art and culture?
I think people, yeah, in Summit County, they do love arts and culture. I think it. I think the Summit County Fair, which I'm the manager of, is a great example of that, kind of bridging the Eastern Summit County and Western Summit County through arts and culture. The things that happen out on the east side might be a little different than what happens here in Park City. A little more country, a little ranchy, that sort of thing. But it's a great bridge for our community. We're so diverse here. So I think that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you look at the calendar of events scheduled for this summer, particularly on the east side, you know, you'll see what Travis is talking about, starting with, well, actually right now we've got The View From My Door, which is the community created public art exhibit in commercial spaces, and 9 of those 13 commercial spaces are on the east side with photographs that were submitted by Summit County residents reflecting what it means to live in Summit County. So that's already up, but we've got the rodeo, Oakley Rodeo, coming the 4th of July. We've got a big event next weekend called the Summit Arts Showcase, which is bringing local artists to do an exhibit and sale on the east side, Francis Frontier Days, and of course the fair. So, you know, and other smaller events throughout, barbecues and
absolutely, all
community
sorts of fun
celebrations.
Stuff happening.
So it really is authentic, I think, to the community and the cultural interests of the residents that live there.
Yeah, and don't you think that in some ways you talk about the bridge between Eastern and Western Summit County, and we all crave what we don't necessarily have. Like, we have all this wonderful art and culture here in the Park City area, but what we don't have is the Demolition Derby or the,
absolutely,
you know, things
rodeo,
like that.
The Francis, Broncos, that sort of,
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, yeah, and we really crave that to give us that whole picture of that experience that we get. I love that.
Absolutely. I think it's just so different where you can go to an event in the east side and pet a sheep, even ride a sheep if you want, check out farm animals, that sort of thing that we're not used to here in Park City. It just keeps it very interesting and dynamic here.
Hey, my crutch is that I'm the new guy in town. I've only been here a couple of years. But 3 years, 3 summers ago, one of the things that got me to really consider the Park City area was the Demolition Derby. So that thing's going on again?
It is going on. So it'll be August 5th, and tickets are almost sold out for it. I think we just have a couple hundred left. So if you haven't got them yet, purchase them now because they're going quickly. It's an interesting event. It definitely is, you know, a crashing, bashing sort of fun time. It happens in the Summit County Fairgrounds in Colville. It'll be August 5th. And it's definitely interesting. We've got
cars, amazing,
trucks, I mean, smokestacks, it's loud, it's it's raw. It's definitely a lot of fun, though.
The day I attended, I woke up in Blanding, went online and said, oh my gosh, there's a Demolition Derby tonight. Can I get a ticket? Yes. And I got there just in time for the Powder Puff Round, which are the women drivers. That was
And
amazing.
The women drivers can be a little wilder than the males, I feel like. they definitely want the title, so... It's a lot of fun to watch. We have people from all over the country, or even people, last year I think we had 15 people from France that came, and they were just so blown away by the whole experience. They're, you know, what is happening here? They've never seen anything quite like it. So it's definitely an American event for sure.
Yeah, and Hadley, aside from that type of event, and you talked about the storefronts, we'll talk about that a little bit. You, again, how many of those are in Eastern Summit County, and specifically Colville, right? or?
Yeah, there are two buildings in Colville, one that has 12 windows. So downtown Main Street on Colville has quite a number of these large format posters. There's another site in Wanship at the old Blue Sky Ranch maintenance station there as you're turning the corner on Highway 32. Oakley Town Hall has a poster, and then five of the commercial buildings in Camas. If you go to darkstorefronts.org, you can see a map. It's actually a 60-mile loop of this community-created public art. And it's been produced by the Summit County Public Art Advisory Board as a temporary project funded with RAP dollars to look at ways to bring kind of lightweight, short-term temporary public art projects into the community, created by the community. The county has also, though, just approved a Percent for Art program. And so this is something that the city has had for some time as a way to finance public art projects. And for the first time, the county has that, which is really progressive and important in terms of what our public art capacity is going to be. So new public buildings, capital improvement buildings, such as the Camas Services building or the Fairgrounds development project, will have 1% earmarked of funds that the Public Art Board will be able to use to curate and select and commission new public artworks.
Wow, that's really great. Hey, what are you trying to portray in those dark storefronts with the photos? If you're on a selection committee, what is it that lands one of those photos in a storefront?
Well, the storefront project really was about putting out a call to the community to say, what does it mean to you, Summit County residents, to live in this place that we call home? What does that look like? And what does it look like literally if you're to stand on your front porch and snap a photograph, or maybe figuratively and, you know, the place that feels most like home to you? So we just put out a call and we got 120 submissions, and we found a way to include, I think, nearly all the submissions. There may have been one or two that the resolution wasn't quite strong enough to be able to blown up to scale, but overall we felt like it really wasn't up to us to curate people's vision, that we wanted to represent people's vision with this project. So we included everything, and on the website you can see all of the artists that submitted photographs, and some of them are everyday photographers, as we all are with our cell phones now, and some of them are professional photographers that show their work around the country, and they're all put together into this kind of collage of life in Summit County.
Nice.
Another new guy question. What is Francis Frontier Days?
Travis.
Francis Frontier Days. So it's a great event that happens. It's coming up in August, end of August, actually. And it happens in Francis. They actually have an international barbecue festival that happens along with it. They bring people in from all over the country. It's barbecue and the Dutch oven cook-off, which is really fun. And it's free samples, so that's a reason to get mm-hmm. out there. It's a really great hometown event there. They have a ranch rodeo, which is a lot of locals participating. Some of the other rodeos that happen throughout Summit County and the state are professional rodeos. So this is definitely your local neighbors and friends jumping on a bronc and riding it, that sort of thing, so you can go out and cheer them on. But it's a lot of fun. They've got a parade that goes along with it too, and some other events, live music, that sort of thing.
And speaking of rodeos, you mentioned the Oakley Rodeo, July 4th.
Yep. So it
are
will
there
be,
tickets for that available?
There are tickets, but it sells out very fast. So, and I'm not sure where their tickets are, but if you don't have them
it's
yet,
it's only a few weeks away.
Yeah, I would get on it. So they do it. In conjunction, I think it's their 86th year. It's been going on for many years now. And they have live music. They have fireworks at nighttime. They have the rodeo itself. It's a professional rodeo as well. And it happens the 1st through the 4th of July. So definitely check it out if you haven't been out there. It's a great kind of Americana way to spend the 4th.
Yeah. So what about participation out there? Do you track where your people come from? Are they... yes, you said there were 15 French people mm-hmm. at the demo derby, but, you know, is it mostly Eastern Summit County? Is it 50-50? They come from, you know, the greater population over here in Park City and Snyderville Basin?
Yeah, so for the Summit County Fair itself, we do track all of the participants in any of our events and the ticketed events as well as the free events that we do. And a lot of people are coming from the Park City area. the Camas Valley, and definitely North Summit is highly represented there. But last year we offered, and we'll be doing the same this year, free transportation from Park City. And people can hop on a free bus here on Main Street or Sweet Alley and go down to the junction and transfer and get a free bus out to Colville, which is really great. So it makes it easy to get out.
Is that a special shuttle just for the event?
Just for the Summit County.
And so do you have to sign up or you can just show up?
You just show up. It runs on every 15 minutes. It goes out there. All the information's on summitcountyfair.org. But it definitely makes it easy to get out there for residents on this side of the county.
Excellent. Well, hey, you have one more thing to say, Adley, or
we get... Yeah, well, I was just going to say in terms of the fine arts side of things, we talked about public art, we've talked about cultural events, the Summit Arts Showcase that's next Friday and Saturday, the 23rd and 24th at the Oakley Red Barn is really one of the only fine arts exhibits and sales that is on the eastern side, and it is bringing fine arts, sculpture, pottery, photography to the community. It's all local artists, some of whom are from the east side, and we get residents from the entire county as well as the Wasatch Front and others that are traveling out of town to come to this event.
Excellent. Hadley Dynack, Park City Summit County Arts Council Executive Director, with her monthly segment. She's brought Travis English along, who runs the Summit County Fair and oversees the special events for Summit County. We're glad that you could join us.
Always fun.
Today.
Thanks for having us.
Good luck with all these events coming up.
We'll come check them out.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
Thanks. And we'll be back after these words. Stay with us.
Hi, I'm Michael Manning, the Director of Golf at Park Meadows Country Club, a proud KPCW supporter. We've planned an active season of golf events, clinics, and lessons for all players on our Jack Nicklaus course, minutes from Park City Main Street. More information at parkmeadowscc.com.
Hi, this is Shelley Barris, Executive Director of Habitat for Humanity. Have you been to our ReStore lately? You will find treasures every visit because we receive new donations of furniture, appliances, and building materials daily. Even better, your purchases support local hardworking families. We are a nonprofit and proud to be a KPCW supporter.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Dave Cushing.
Hello.
Well, hey, you know, we do it every day for hours on end, every single day of our lives. And yet there's so much we don't know about it. It eludes us. We crave it when we're young. We don't want so much of it. When we're older, we want a lot of it. It's sleep. And if you've noticed recently, there has been an onslaught of articles surfacing about sleep and its importance. Joining us to talk about the subject is a sleep expert, Dr. Kelly Woodward of the Live Well Center. You know that place right here in Park City at the Park City Hospital. He joins us to talk about sleep and how it's not just the absence of being awake. You know, the quality of our sleep can determine our quality of life. And the lack of quality of sleep can sometimes determine our disease, even. I think Dr. Kelly Woodward might agree with that. Good morning to you. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Liv. Dave, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would certainly agree. We've learned over the last several decades the importance and the powerful effect sleep has on our health beyond what we ever imagined before. And as you mentioned, sleep is much more than just the absence of being awake. It is a hugely powerful and complex process that it affects all aspects of our health, from the processes that we control hormones, that our body manages our hormone balance, to energy restoration, to helping us with weight loss, as well as a lot of complex processes that are important for brain function, for memory, all these things very, very critical that people get good quality sleep, as you mentioned.
And so good quality sleep consists of these different parts and these components of your sleep cycle. Can you explain those to us?
Yeah, it's absolutely fascinating. At least I find it fascinating. Sleep is this complex symphony. It has an architecture. Mm-hmm. So it has to go through this process of different stages. It requires about 7 to 9 hours for most adults to go through this complex symphony of processes in different stages. So early in sleep, we go into the deepest sleep, slow wave delta sleep, which is the most restorative sleep. That's to to pay off our sleep debt or our strong urge to sleep. Later in sleep, we shift to REM sleep, having more REM sleep, which occurs in about 90-minute cycles. And REM sleep is a process characterized by our eyes moving rapidly. But what's happening in REM sleep is we're processing a lot of, replaying a lot of memories from our recent days and sorting those and building things that we want to make permanent memories and discarding things that our brain is, you know, saying we don't need to keep. And it's in those different stages that different parts of memory are built. So very important early in sleep to build muscle memory. So if you're an athlete trying to remember new techniques, you need to get that sleep, as well as later in the REM sleep, we process or we consolidate memories for processes, like things we've learned how to do certain tasks. So all these stages of sleep are critically important, and it's a highly complex process, and you can't shorten it, you can't avoid it. If you don't get it, you're not getting the benefits of healthy sleep.
Wow. So what is that? And this is a personal question, because I tend to be the one who wakes up at 4 a.m. or 3:30. So that last stage of sleep, what are you missing out on when you don't get that?
Yeah, so that's that latter part of sleep, again, more REM sleep.
Okay.
As we get older, it turns out we do get less of that sleep, and that's a natural process of aging. It can be a bit frustrating, but most of us can learn to kind of work with it. The important thing is, you know, if you're getting adequate sleep, if the kind of the basic test for all of us is, do you wake up refreshed, rested, and alert? And can you go through your day without feeling like you're going to doze off all the time? Or if you're not, if you're feeling like you're able to do the things you want to do, you're likely getting restful sleep.
Something personal about me is I have been blessed with a reasonably good ability to sleep. But I've heard from other people in the room that their sleep is interrupted sometimes because of my snoring. Mm-hmm. So how does that fit in with the other person, and what does a snorer do to handle that situation?
Yeah, so some snoring is not a problem. Some snoring is normal. We all snore a little from time to time. However, regular, persistent snoring shouldn't be ignored. There are conditions such as sleep apnea that can be indicated by snoring. So people who snore a lot should have an evaluation to be sure that they don't have a sleep disorder like sleep apnea, because that's can be a very dangerous condition, and by the way, it can be life-changing to treat it. Snoring is mostly a nuisance to our partners, so it can disrupt their sleep, so sometimes we have to kind of address that as well. But for each of us personally, snoring should not be ignored because of its potential indication of something like sleep apnea, which we need to get evaluated. So you need to get an evaluation, start with your primary care provider, and sometimes it requires special laboratory testing to really know what's going on.
What's the incidence of sleep apnea in the general population?
Ooh, it's pretty high. It's estimated to be as high as 20 to 25%, depending on how they sort of draw the criteria for diagnosing it. It's a little more prevalent, interestingly, at higher altitudes.
Mm.
And certainly when the risks for sleep apnea, men get it more than women. As we get older, the likelihood of having sleep apnea, the risk of it goes up. Being overweight or having some airway abnormalities, all are risk factors for sleep apnea.
Interesting. I think I mentioned this to you a couple of weeks ago on this show. We spoke with Dr. Andrew Weil. He's the integrative medical doctor, quite famous, the big beard guy. He was telling us, we were asking about sleep aids, anything from melatonin all the way to, I'm forgetting the word of the one that people get addicted to.
Ambien,
yeah.
Hate to pick on a brand.
Right. So what he was saying about sleep aids is they often take away your dream cycle, and that is a very important part of your sleep as well. Talk about that.
Yeah, so I tend to be very restrictive in my application of sleep aids. So sleep aids, while they can help people toggle into sleep, help you tip from being awake into sleep, they tend to virtually all, in one way or another, disrupt the quality of sleep. Mm. They tend to mess a bit with that architecture, including changing how much time we spend in the different stages of sleep. So if we don't you know, if we disrupt that late stage of sleep where REM sleep, which is where most dreams arise, REM sleep is a very, very shallow sleep. It's the most shallow stage of sleep. We're very near awake. Mm-hmm. And that's why we remember dreams from REM late in the morning sleep. So anything that disrupts that architecture will disrupt these stages of sleep and can decrement the benefit of sleep. That being said, there are times when sleep aids are very appropriate. I think people just need to be very careful in using them. One I would just put out a particular caution about is the kind of the common over-the-counter sleep aids, melatonin aside. Melatonin is a unique compound. But the other routine sort of sleep aids often use an antihistamine. Antihistamines are very disruptive to sleep. And interestingly, as we get older, antihistamines can be very bad for an aging brain.
Oh, this is very interesting. Yeah.
They actually cause the same effect that happens in dementia. The same chemical balance is caused by a type of antihistamine that's used in most sleep aids.
So that half of a Tylenol PM I sometimes take at night is possibly why I can't remember anyone's name recently.
Well, I would say just be cautious, and I would certainly advise against using those things all the time. If you need that kind of sleep help, you should get some professional assistance.
Where is the vanguard of the sleep study community? Is there associated with a particular institution or college, university?
Right here in this community?
In the world.
Yeah, so yeah. There are there's a very well-established professional network of sleep specialists in the United States and Europe. The United States, American Society for Sleep Medicine is kind of the professional body for physicians that specialize in sleep medicine and other professionals in sleep medicine. We have a variety of very, very reputable, good organizations in the country, the National Sleep Foundation and others that are pushing out, helping to educate and inform with highly valuable, highly accurate information about sleep so that people can get the truth and get the right answers from organizations that just want to educate and promote healthy sleep.
And to what extent are sleep interventions, sleep studies, sleep medicine treatments covered by today's insurance plans?
Yeah, so good news is most of people who need an evaluation or treatment for sleep disorders, much of that is covered by insurance because they recognize it's a powerful part of health. And so we've not experienced much trouble with people, applying their insurance if they need help with sleep for the most part.
Good. Right. So wondering about, with sleep and this preoccupation over sleep and the ensuing anxiety and stress when we don't get sleep, I think maybe as we age that kind of increases. But I'm wondering about, and I think we may have talked about this once, about the, things like the Fitbit, and they report to you what your sleep was like. Do you think that helps or increases our stress level about sleep?
Well, I think that you shouldn't use them if it's going to increase your anxiety about sleep. Because part of my personal sort of test that I advise about sleep is not only, are you rested and feeling alert, but you shouldn't have stress about sleep.
Yeah.
That's how you know you should be able to embrace sleep as this very positive thing in your life. And if it's a source of stress, that tends to be disruptive. The devices can be very helpful to help people to set the habits of sleep. Mm-hmm. Sleep really requires being in a habit. And I'll say we have to probably get in the habit of adjusting our sort of social life to accommodate sleep, not shorten sleep to accommodate our social lives and our busy lives. And that's part of the habit we need to set. But these devices can help us to know that we're in the habit. I don't think people should really dwell on the nuances of the quantitative measure of it other than to use it to know that they've put in the time that they need for sleep. So part of it is scheduling enough time to get adequate sleep.
Yeah.
And then recognizing that we have a natural rhythm that we all need to take advantage of that helps us sleep. And if you fight against that natural rhythm, you're likely to be struggling against sleep or to get good sleep. But learn your body's signals, learn the habits, and then follow those, and you're more likely to get healthy sleep.
So, you mentioned, I think this is a big takeaway for me from this conversation, is that if you don't have a problem falling asleep, you just have a problem staying asleep, sleep aids aren't going to help you anyway, because, I'll ask you that question.
Well, there are occasions, not regularly, where people do have such trouble staying asleep that there are medications that can help with that. However, I think those have to be considered very carefully with professional advice and to be sure you don't have some sleep disorder that needs a different sort of treatment. But the things we have to do, it is normal for each of us to wake up multiple times during the night. The issue is, do we toggle back to sleep fairly readily? That's the thing we want, and that's healthy. So it's not abnormal to wake up several times in 7 to 9 hours of sleep. So parts of things that help us stay asleep, make sure during the day we get adequate exercise. That helps. Not exercise too close to when you go to bed. That's activating. So exercise earlier in the day. That helps us get better sleep. Make sure the environment is such that we don't have lots of things in the middle of the night that prompt us to wake up or prevent us from going to bed. One of the biggest things I find is people have trouble getting a quiet mind. So many people can't fall asleep because their mind is racing. You have to have a quiet kind of mind to fall asleep. But then also other people wake up and their mind starts racing again. They start going through their to-do list. Mm. Some of this is very much a learned thing that we have to learn to turn our minds off, learn. And those are habits we have to learn. And there are ways to help with that. Once in a great while, medication is used to help people stay asleep through the night. Not usually.
Do you have some specific tips to quiet the racing mind either before sleep or in the middle of the night?
Yes, there are, I think, many techniques that people can consider. Mindfulness, training in mindfulness, which is about really training our minds, and there are very good programs, and we have some of these at the Live Well Center. You can find out about them on our website to help people learn to be mindful. You really have to learn these things, and if many of us have kind of found that habit, and that's great. But if you haven't and need help, I really encourage people to get help with mindfulness, yoga, other things to help kind of reduce stress. Also, if you need help managing or addressing those very things that are causing you stress. And then finally, if you have chronic medical conditions that are disrupting sleep or that you're worried about, pain, for example, people should not be in pain during the night. It's very disruptive of sleep and can prevent people from getting quality sleep. And you need to address that, and that might be different than a different treatment.
Dr. Kelly Woodward, he's the medical director at the Live Well Center at Park City Hospital. And I just talked to someone that was out there yesterday and said, it's like a spa experience, that new Live Well Center. And it really is, and newly renovated, and people really ought to take a visit out there and just get a tour.
Absolutely. Please stop by. We're located in the Park City Hospital on the main floor, and we have our focus is on lifestyle and prevention of activities to help people stay healthy, as well as help people manage chronic conditions. So we use a team-based approach to address physical activity and nutrition and sleep and stress management so that people can get ahead of disease and stay healthy. And we, again, have a team of experts there with a beautiful facility, state-of-the-art equipment right here in our community. It's a real treasure for Park City to have this.
Really is. Dr. Kelly Woodward, great to see you. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks
for
having me.
And we'll be back after this.
Hi, this is Whitney Wall from Park City Mountain and proud supporter of KPCW. This summer, Park City Mountain offers a variety of events for the whole family, including the annual July 4th celebration and fireworks, summer concert series, and weekly Wednesday Farmers Market. The full calendar of Park City Mountain events is available at parkcitymountain.com.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air, Cruise, and Travel, 565-4730, parkcityaircruiseandtravel.com. Long, Reimer, Weiniger, Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
And thank you to today's underwriters, Davidson Orthopedics, Zions Bank, Park Meadows Country Club, Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, San Francisco Design, Park City Mountain, and Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties.
And you've been listening to KPC.